10 o'clock in the morning, a Monday in the middle of the war. The grey middle, when nobody is winning and hope is frozen. Early 1943, but it might have been any other year in the middle of any other war. For the middle winters of war are always the same. Grey, timeless, nobody winning. In a club in St. James Street, London, an old man stiffly lowered the Daily Telegraph he was reading and leaned towards the next chair. A faded spark of aggression struggled fleetingly with the senile glaze of his eyes.
"Why don't they get on?" the old man said. "What are they waiting for? Why don't they get on?"
The communique from Algiers said, "Nothing to report. Patrol activity." It had said the same for many mornings. In Algiers, the staff of Allied Forces headquarters, which seemed now to fill half the town, sat in their offices, in the requisitioned hotels and houses and office buildings, attending to their morning mail. As they dealt with documents concerning such diverse matters as gun parts, venereal disease statistics, harbour installations, personnel appointments, special clothing for docks operating companies, summer underwear for nursing personnel, modifications to anti-tank mine fuses, psychiatric treatment at certain base hospitals, faulty ammunition, discipline, boots, and troop movement, to mention a tiny fraction of what lay before them, they grumbled about the weather and chatted pleasantly about their social life, about local families with whom they had become friendly, of the headway or otherwise being made with this or that young woman, of places they had found where you could get something tolerable to eat, of how boring they were beginning to find Algiers. As they slit open the endless buff envelopes and passed the contents, with a scrawl in the margin, to someone else to worry about, many of the male staff officers made dates with the female staff officers, who were now arriving in considerable numbers. It was all very chummy and unhurried and metropolitan, and remote from the war. Bureaucracy sur mer. Whitehall flavoured with garlic and charcoal, combining business and pleasure in a new kind of holiday camp, with all found. Many miles to the east, at army headquarters, it happened at 10 o'clock in the morning that a colonel in supply and transport was saying,
"What it boils down to, old boy, is that for the present, men are expendable, tanks aren't. And that's all there is to it."
To reach Corps headquarters, you had to travel another 60-odd miles eastwards along that same main road, which, if you were patient enough, would bear you all the way from Algiers to Cairo. At Corps, the general had been talking irritably about the present defensive role having to continue for the time being. Like everyone else at Corps, the general was tired of being on the defensive. At Corps, defence can become very tedious. The general's batman, who always called at the other rank's cookhouse for a mug of tea at 10 o'clock, passed the information on in less formal terms and not quite accurately.
"According to what the old bleeder was saying this morning," said the batman, taking a deep gulp of tea, "we're to go on sitting on our flaming arses for the rest of the war."
At divisional headquarters, the same sort of office life was proceeding, but it was more compact, more purposeful. So that it seemed more related to the waging of war than the other headquarters. This was a glamour division. It had been doing the work of two ever since the beginning of the campaign. Each of its 9 battalions had learned its job in hard little baptismal battles. Each had distinguished itself at least once, some of them several times. The reputation of the division had begun to spread. It was becoming famous for its endurance and its capacity for improvisation.